So the main point I'd like to discuss today is is about the beyond Landau's signature breaking paradigm. You know, for a long time, we feel that maybe the signature breaking other parameter Lagrangian correlation is everything. So whenever you see a phase and a phase transition, one try to find the other parameter and the change other parameter give us a phase transition. We have Ginzburg-Landau theory, almost like the universal theory of phase transition. But after discovery of quantum Hall states, we find that the Landau's paradigm may not general enough, so there's a new state of a matter. Actually, it's very ironic that is the quantum Hall state is a third example, third class example, which does not fit the paradigm. The first experimental example is the supercollanding states, where this I think there's a lot of Ginzburg-Landau theory is developed based on supercollanding states, which is an example which does not work with Ginzburg-Landau theory. And another example beyond a signature breaking description is from liquid theory, actually. Today I will mainly discuss the third example and some more recent example. The first point is that what is this new kind of order, which is called a topological order? You know, for a long time we don't know what is a new order. We know what it is not. It's not signature breaking. It have no other parameter. Have no Lagrangian correlation. But we don't know what it is. You know, and even now it's not clear what is topological order. But there's some hint. So one thing I want to emphasize is that in the signature breaking description, there's a notion of a particle condensate. And the simplest picture is that we just fill the particle in a K2-0 level. We fill all the boson.
Mike, sorry.
It's very formal.
We're told you guys wanted this recorded. So.
Hold on, I think.
Just go ahead and put that in the pocket.
Okay.
Sorry, John,
I see.
So Sheldon, so the Ginzburg-Landau theory was developed in context of superconductors, and you're saying that
that's an example is doesn't work.
Meaning it disagrees with experiments, or?
In a sense, yes. At the mean field level, is no distinction, but when you include fluctuation, does not really work.
You just mean that psi is not gauge invariant, and so you're formulating
in terms of. It's really, you know, when I say this, it may be a little bit too strong, but. You know, if a gauge interaction is irrelevant, then it's maybe works. Maybe in some higher dimension, it works better. Yeah, but in general, it doesn't work. But the reason we use Ginzburg-Landau theory, we think it works because we don't treat the electromagnetic field as dynamical field. You know, if you treat the electromagnetic field as a dynamical field, it may change the critical behavior at a transition point.
It does.
Yeah, exactly. In low dimension, it does. In higher dimension, maybe there's irrelevant coupling, it's maybe okay.
But you think just conceptually formulating something in terms of...
conceptually, that's a different...
Non-gauge invariant condensate.
Yeah. So one thing I try to emphasize is that the signature breaking order have a notion of a particle condensate. The easiest way to think about particle condensate to think about a system of boson which you put all boson in a K2-0 state. But this is kind of a level filling picture to understand many body physics. A better way to understand this boson condensed state is this one. It's a wave function for this n variable wave function which describes ground state of n bosons. It's constant. Or it can be viewed as a equal weight superposition of all boson configuration. So this X means all kind of boson configuration. Position, boson can have any position, but no matter, the ground state just has equal weight superposition of all this kind of boson configuration. So this is a so-called boson condensed states. Okay, so there's a I choose this because there's an example. This is kind of like a particle. There's a it's particle-like. Another example for boson condensation is to consider this a spin 1/2 system. For spin 1/2 system, we can think about the states where the spin, all the spin point in x direction. So maybe let's do it this way. All the spin point in x direction. In this system, all the spin point in x direction, which can be written as, again, equal to the superposition of all up and downs. You know, this x represents all arbitrary, you know, up and down in the z direction. You have an equal to superposition of all the up and down in the z direction. So this is again, like a particle condensed state. You can view the down spin as no particle, up spin as one particle. So these states and these states are the same thing. So from these two examples, I try to generalize. That is, any symmetry breaking states which have characterized by some other parameter, so in some sense, a particle condensed state, some generalized particle, there's some kind of a local degree freedom. When you make a superposition for them, you get some kind of a long-range order parameter. So I try to associate the symmetry breaking order parameter and this kind of superposition of a particle-like object. So there seems a connection between these two. And then there's one way to look at the symmetry breaking states. Then there's another notion from this spin 1/2 example, a very important notion. That is, this equivalent superposition of all up and down spin can be written as a direct product of, on each side we have a up plus down. So this is on side I. Then we have direct product on all sides. Okay. So this state also is this state. But when I'm writing this way, there's another notion, which is that this is a local or intra-site entanglement. Or maybe I shouldn't even say entanglement because people in quantum computing may kill me. So this is when I say entanglement, it really means a superposition. So on each side, you have a two state up and down. We can have some superposition of up and down. And different superposition represent different spin orientation. But however, the total many-body ground states is kind of a direct product of this kind of local states. So I try to call this a local entanglement. Another little bit less trivial example is the following. It's a kind of dimer state. Again, think about spin 1/2 system, we can consider a dimer state. So maybe I should draw this line. So each dimer representing a spin singlet of up and down. So these dimer states certainly do not have this form, because this pair is a up minus down, in up and down minus down up. So it's not single side entanglement. But however, it's still local entanglement in the sense that if you group these two sides, then there is no entanglement between different groups. So
what do you mean by the, for the spin case, what do you mean by sum and x?
The x means up and down configuration. This x is it's just sum of arbitrary this up and down spin configuration.
With equal weight.
With equal weight, yeah, here it's with equal weight. So in this way, this and the bottom one is kind of similar, yes?
So if you have atoms in a trap and they both condensed,
yeah,
that's not that kind of wave function.
No, strictly speaking, that's not really condensed state beyond, that's not thermal Danton limit. So here, a 10-point system which you can take n go to infinity, but the density would remain finite.
Right.
You know, when you have a harmonic trap, the thermal Danton limit is very different.
Funny.
So that's really that's beyond what I'm going to talk about today. That's you know, a lot of phenomena here is really a thermodynamical property. So here we assume when you take thermodynamic limit, the system have the local property system do not change.
Right. Okay, but more generally, even in the thermodynamic limit, that assumes translational symmetry.
Exactly.
Central,
exactly.
Which isn't really.
Yeah. So the sense of distance is the key here. You need to have a sense of distance and a sense of dimensionality. So that's when you take some other limit, somehow the sense of distance emerge. And then the locality in that way, sometimes local entanglement. So that's really a reference to this emergent distance. So you need to have a distance. If a harmonic trap is a little bit tricky. Yeah. Okay. So from this local entanglement picture, I think is very important. So I think this may be this local entanglement problem is a key for the all so-called conventional quantum states. And the conventional quantum states we construct, in some sense, things all have a local entanglement.
Using conventional sort of ordering described by Landau theory,
yeah,
has this property.
Yeah, so things like that. Yeah, and but however, I have to say the when I say conventional, the convention does not include the fermion. So I should qualify myself for the conventional quantum phase of a bosonic system. They probably all have this. Maybe near the end, I'll try to argue the fermion itself is non-local. So fermion, I don't know how to talk about the Fermi liquid, actually.
Maybe another exception is the Kovalev phases, like a 2I model, two-dimensional, even at fine temperature.
Yes.
You don't have, it's really a transition between two disordered phases.
That's right.
So it doesn't go into this paradigm.
Yeah. To be really rigorous, let me try to say maybe the bosonic phase with a finite energy gap. That's really, really rigorous. But when you have a gapless excitation, things became trickier. Yeah. So all these are really nothing really rigorous. And I think what we try to do here is that I think those kind of a picture is very, very useful. And what we try to do here is try to sharpen those pictures to make a rigorous statement. And I think the most rigorous statement along this line of thinking can be made only for the bosonic system with finite energy gap. For the gapless case, what do you mean by non-local? Decay as one over R is non-local, or not decay as one over Q? This became what kind of power algebra decay became tricky. Yeah, but I don't know. But here, what I try to say, one thing I want to emphasize along this line of thinking is that the so-called topological ordered phase is a phase where you have a so-called long-range entanglement. I try to say the long-range entanglement, which is that you cannot find the cluster you cannot find a finite cluster where the inter-cluster entanglement vanishes. So that's maybe a more general way to define what is the topological order of the phase. So from this point of view, what I try looking for is actually looking for the state with non-local entanglement. So that is that's one way to define topological order of the states. Yes, any question here?
Exactly.
Yeah, this is, I couldn't answer this more precise mathematical statement. Let me try to say this. The more precise way to understand this, I can give an example that's related to topological entropy. One way to really more rigorous way to characterize the entanglement, this non-local entanglement, is using topological entropy. The topological entropy is the following. You have this some kind of quantum ground states. And then you just get a region. So let's say you take this subsystem, this annulus, this ring-like subsystem. Now what you do is that this kind of so-called von Neumann entropy people study in quantum information theory, that you trace out the degree of freedom outside in the other part of the system, and try to get a denser state of this subsystem, And then you can calculate the entropy from the resulting density of states. And then there's an issue is that the difference of this, the Van der Waals entropy of this kind of system, and we can compare the difference of Van der Waals entropy in these two systems. So there's a difference. Kind of difference is that we just remove a piece of it. You know, these two are kind of similar, remove a piece of it. And then we can.
So the hash theory is what you, is the degrees of freedom you're tracing over?
No, we trace over other regions.
Everything
else. We trace over everything else. And we can consider the following thing. We can have a, we can start with this and taking out a similar piece. You can see, when we calculate the difference of entropy in these two cases, we're taking out the same piece, just in the bottom. But far away from the piece we're taking out, in this part, we have a different situation. Here we have a gap. Here we don't have a gap. If everything is local, then these two differences should be the same, because the difference only depends on this neighborhood. They don't care whether this is a gap or not. And but for the topological ordered states, these two differences are different. So this is a more mathematical way try to characterize that maybe there is some kind of non-local entanglement. So I don't know what is non-local entanglement.
Well, the shadow region is basically B minus 1. So radius is created by the system size, and
the width is... No, this shadow region is some big ring, you know. Each difference is not universal, you know. But the difference of these two differences is universal in a limit where this region became big. Yeah.
So this is a thermodynamic property.
This thermodynamic property.
Entropy
difference. Yeah.
Finite.
Yes.
Per unit volume.
Yeah. It's actually your entropy only depends on the length of parameter in this case. So, but the main thing is that if you do this calculation for the finite system, finite ring, the difference of difference is not universal. It may depend on system-dependent coupling. But when you take a limit, it approach a universal value.
So you're saying if I did this for ordinary
Order
state, difference will be the same.
Zero. Yeah. The difference of difference is zero. Yeah. And but for topological states, topological ordered states, this difference of difference is not zero.
Okay, but you are saying it's a surface effect.
And for the gap states with the short-running correlation, with the local short-running correlation, the Van der Waals entropy are proportional to the perimeter of this region. Yeah.
So when you say gap states, anything that breaks continuous symmetry would not, if there's a Goldstone homology.
Okay, for gapless states, because the correlation function is a long range, so then this local property would have a problem.
Right.
And so they may approach something, but actually it's still non-zero, but it's different universality. I cannot claim that in a similar limit, the difference is a number. I cannot say that anymore.
Like at a critical point, for example.
Yeah, the critical point is more.
It's not going to be zero.
Yeah, it's more delicate. Yeah. So, yes, in a sense, critical point may have a non-local entanglement, and but here the interesting thing we find is that for some system, the local correlation is all short-ranged. The correlation of a local operator always short-ranged. Even for that system, you can have a non-local entanglement. If a local operator have a long-range correlation, like this algebraic correlation, and then I don't know. Yeah, this situation is a situation I don't know how to really view this. Yeah. Okay.
So one question. So what would be the distinction between a topological phase and a quantum state at a critical point then in this picture?
The distinction is in this picture is not clear. So the real distinction, the topological phase in a strict sense all have a short range correlation function. And so essentially the more rigorous statement from the system which makes this more rigorous is a system where all the local operators have a short range correlation. Okay. And then we can use this non-local entanglement to characterize there's some non-trivial thing in it. And for the system where the operator have algebraic correlation, I don't know. I don't have something general to say. But there's still, that's I don't know. Yeah.
So in obtaining non-zero entropy difference, is it important to take a different topology in the geometry?
Yeah, in this case, very important. You can see that's this topology is different. That's very important. If a topology is same by removing this piece and this piece is then, you don't change how much. It's the same. The topological entropy will be zero. Yeah, the key here is that here we have a ring, and all other geometry we don't have a ring, and then this expose some kind of a non-local entanglement in it. Yeah. Okay. So the next question is that how to construct or how to get a state with non-local entanglement. You know, so here if you say that if a non-local entanglement is a key, or maybe long-range entanglement more precise, long-range entanglement is a key to obtain new quantum state matter, then the next question is that how to construct such state. How to obtain such state for some system. So that's the next. I try to give some example. And one example is a model studied by Kitev, which is a spin 1/2 system, where the spin is defined on the link. Okay. And then the Hamiltonian of the model is a sum of a vertex term. But for each vertex, we get a four spin product, sigma z product. So this is a product four spin around each vertex. So this is a four spin around each vertex. Then we have another term is a kind of a square term. It's product of sigma x around the four spin surrounding a square. Okay. Then the claim is that the ground state of this Hamiltonian have a long-range entanglement. Okay. And to see that, one can first look at this term first. This term says that, let's put some minus sign in front of it. This term says that the product of the four spin is better to be positive. Okay, so that means if all spin up, then that's fine. If all spin up, that will be ground state of this term. But however, if you flip one spin from up to down, then the product of this four spin will change from plus 1 to minus 1, that's cost energy. But however, if you flip a loop of a spin, and you flip a loop of spin, then the product around each vertex remain to be positive. So therefore, if Hamiltonian only contain the first term, the ground state of this part is all the closed loops. So this closed loop configuration, we can call this X, some closed loop configuration. So it's kind of, it's a string. And then what is this term? This term just a flip a spin around each square. So this term create a loop. So here is falling. If all spin up, that's a reference state. We say no string. a loop of spin down is a string. So these states create a loop of a string. Okay. So this term is a string dynamics.
It's not a concept you can just create it out of.
There's no.
You just operate.
Yeah.
If there's no loop, you can create
anyone. Yeah, exactly. And when you already have a loop, when you apply this operator, it may change the shape of the loop. So this is really a string hopping term. When you have both terms, the ground state no longer degenerate. If you don't have the second term, all these closed loop configuration have same energy, so they have extensive degeneracy. But when you have this string hopping term, only one superposition of those closed loop is ground state energy. And the superposition is pretty simple. That, so we've seen this several times. But this is but now this X really means all the closed loop configuration. And so that by comparing with the boson condensation, so this we can call this condensation for closed strings. So this is the closed string condensed states. Okay, so this really link there's two things. When you have boson condensation, that's led to some kind of local entanglement. When you have a string condensation, then we can have a non-local entanglement.
Does this map onto 3D Ising or something like that?
Yes, but however, this is since you raised this question, so let's continue on this line of thinking. Because the superposition of OX, you know, it's like this. Here, I think you have a bad angle there. This is superposition of all boson position, we call boson condensation. Here we have a superposition of all string configuration, we call string condensation.
Is this work for all corner sharing? Is this logic work for all?
Oh yeah, for. You know, this Hamiltonian may change, but this picture works in anything, any dimension, you know, any lattice.
So 3D has a parallel system, for example. In that case, it's not group excitation, but some other
What's your question?
In 3D case, excitation is not a loop, but something other thing?
Yeah, okay. Then you get something different.
Do you know what it is?
I don't know what system you're talking about. So, but the loop here is important. But we'll go into the detail what kind of loop maybe in a moment.
Yeah.
But in this example is very here. I just emphasize the superposition of loops is called a string condensation, which that's one way to get non-local entanglement. It's using the extended object, using superposition for extended object to construct a state with non-local entanglement. And then this state would represent a new state of quantum matter because it's beyond Binswanger-Landau because it's characterized by non-local entanglement.
Can you explain it? So in both cases, you have this k equals 0 state, equals to a position. But what's the...
That is a particle. That k is for the particle. Here we don't even have a particle, so we cannot even talk about the k. Only in the many-body sense, the two states are very similar. One case is superposition of all possible configuration of particles. Here is a superposition of all possible configuration of strings. And so in these two sense, they are similar. But we no longer have energy level filling picture. We cannot fill the k equals 0 level. That picture is totally broken. And as a side remark, I feel this energy level filling picture, it's so powerful, so popular, but it's really now became that now they have a negative effect. It kind of prevents us to go beyond that paradigm. Okay.
So if you compute the top part for entropy, so this will be log 2. Okay?
Yes, exactly.
So this has been carried out. The computation has been done.
Yes.
Then if you do the same thing for the
party
with a wavefront, can you get
a log 2 too? That has not been done. That's really interesting.
It should be log 2. So, but my question is, they're both log 2. Do you have an idea what's else to compute so you can see the difference?
You mean,
the answer for this model.
Oh, I see.
Not two, that's for sure. So the question is, do you have anything else?
I'm not sure they are the same.
They have to be.
No, this is doubled.
But the speed will be determined by the global dimensions. So
I see.
They are both two.
You think that's a.
Yeah,
the double, not double, doesn't matter. Because the example I have is the Fafnir states in the quantum Hall system, one can do a similar calculation. And
the argument will give you both.
Both the same thing.
They are both log D, so you won't see a difference.
I see. I see. That I don't know. Yeah.
But nobody has computed.
Nobody computed for quantum Hall states. The reason is that this topological entropy is conceptually very good, numerically very bad.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's very hard. If you know, we can calculate a topological entropy because there's a class of wave function like this, equal with the superposition of all loop. This wave function is very simple. Then you can calculate this topological entropy analytically. But however, suppose you add a perturbation, you can add some kind of sigma y interaction, for example, between ij link. You add some perturbation, then the ground state wave function became something different. And then you ask me, can you show that in some other limit you get the same topological entropy? Then that calculation is very difficult because numerically it's just the numerical very difficult. So I really love to do similar calculation for quantum Hall states, which is half of the system, its chiral version. Then whether one can do that or not, because quantum Hall states don't have a string interpretation, and what one get? Yeah.
But I thought there was some recent numerical work calculating topological entropy for Laplace state.
I know there's some calculation, but I don't know about Laughlin states. But the things are the system size just is just impossible. It's it's just too difficult. Yes.
Yeah, I'd probably make two statements. So one is, if you look at the perturbation, and actually that has been done, carried out the calculation of the topological entropy for the current field. And even recent perturbation, similar like eigeninteraction or magnetic field,
yeah.
Topological entropy stays two and then goes down at the phase condition.
I see.
And my question is about the phase condition. If you add a perturbation like a simpler one, even accelerated magnetic field, which a large magnetic field,
yes.
So it polarizes everything. So you have a classical magnet instead of a quantum loop gas.
Yes.
And then the mapping has already mentioned, so you can map that to the 3D Ising model.
Yes.
So the type of phase condition that you get is a second order phase condition between a topologically ordered state and a
classical
state.
Yes.
It's a 3D Ising universality class. So how does this fit into your statement that this does not match Ginzburg lambda? Because of course the 3D Ising transition is something we very well understand.
Yes, that's right.
So how do these two statements match?
Okay. So let's go to this 3D Ising model. And let me see whether I should go to how much detail I need to go to. So this is a loop. Okay, in a subspace, suppose this coefficient is very big, this U is very big. So therefore the low energy subspace of this Hamiltonian is just all the loops. Then for the loop can be viewed as there's a dual description, that is inside the loop, outside the loop. So you can use in a height model. You can view loop as a domain of up spin and down spin, domain boundary between up spin and down spin. Then you can put this up and down spin variable on the on each plaquet, plus minus on each plaquet, then every up and down spin configuration in the center of a square would correspond to this loop configuration. So therefore, the superpositions are equal weight of all the loops, more or less equal to superposition of up and down. And then that became this state. So indeed, in this case, this mapping exists.
Why do you say more or less?
There's a constraint that is the total, I think a total number plus or minus has to be even, something like that. There is a, no, let me see, that's not. In the open space, they are same. But with a pure boundary condition, and with a pure boundary condition, they are not the same. For the pure boundary condition, we could have this kind, this actually important, we could have this loop just wrap around the system. And this configuration cannot be obtained by using up and down as domain wall. Because we only have one domain. Yeah. And this turned out to be crucial here. That's it. But the thermodynamic property, indeed, you can use duality to kind of dual variable. Then you can you don't need this. So actually, there's a lot of a large body work in statistical physics to using duality mapping. So a lot of duality mapping actually we can use that to describe some state with non-local entanglement. So you can study spin system and to go to dual variable, and using some kind of symmetry breaking states in a dual variable, then actually that description sometimes can happen to be a description for long range entanglement in the original variable. And so this is very powerful. But however, my own opinion is that it's just a trick. It doesn't offer you a global picture. You know, sometimes a dual picture works, sometimes doesn't work. If it works, you can use a dual variable and a symmetry breaking in dual variable to study this long range entanglement. But there are many examples this duality mapping doesn't work. And you know, we have a lot of examples where with non-local entanglement which have no dual description. And the one example is if a stream form a network. And then this network condensate can also have a different class of non-local entanglement, but then you lose a dual description in this case. Yeah.
So that's like three-body
interaction? Hmm? How do you get that? It's called three-body interaction? Oh, 12-body interaction. On the Kaigman line. There's a Hamiltonian with 12-spin interaction, such that some state like that can be exact ground states. And that is that's a different class of local entanglement. Okay, so the bottom line is that in a duality transformation, the dual variable is a non-local operator in terms of original variable. So the symmetry breaking or long range order, some condensation of this non-local object, which you can generally call topological defect. So condensation, particle-like condensation of a topological defect can be a way to study the non-local long-range entanglement in the original variable. So that is the second mechanism or second way to construct topological ordered states, is to study a topological defect of something which is particle-like. Then you make a condensate state of this topological defect. Then in many cases, this would lead to a topological ordered states in terms of original variable. Yeah, but this is a.
But the statement is that topological defect condenses as you exit the topological.
You treat this topological defect as a particle, then you try to construct a particle condensed state for this topological defect. And then this kind of particle condensed states for topological defect many times correspond to the some kind of a quite non-trivial topological order state in terms of the original variable. Yeah.
Did you sort it? The condensed state is a topological order state, or the...
The condensed state is a topological order state.
Not the gap
state. Yeah, if a topological defect do not condense, then you don't.
Then you're not topological.
Yeah, in a sense, what I'm trying to say is that in many order states, you can have topological defect. And then you try to construct a quantum coherent condensate of a topological defect, which corresponds to in the ordered state, you have a topological defect. Then you try to write down superposition for all this position for topological defect. You get some very nasty wave function. And that wave function can be highly, highly non-trivial. And that's another way to describe it. But this way only works if a topological defect is particle-like. And in this also, that's it works in two plus one dimension. In a 3+1 dimension, one may have a trouble. Sometimes topological defect also string-like. So you can use the string from the spin to describe a string liquid. But the topological defect also string-like. If you're using condensation or string, the vortex line, that's also string, so you don't gain anything. So this duality works very well in many cases in 1+2 dimension. In 1+3 dimension, this string condensation have its due, but it's due also string condensation. You don't gain much. So you have to do string condensation in 3 dimension. Actually, this may be the reason why in statistical physics, people feel the duality is enough. Because in static, you have a 3 dimension. When you have a string condensation, it's due to height model. You don't need to go beyond Gibbs-Fong-Landau. But in quantum system, you have a space-time, which is 4 dimension. The string condensation due to string condensation, so you have to study string condensation by themselves. That's another point. Okay.
It's a picture. I mean, how do you work with this? Is there a way to work with it analytically? I mean,
this is maybe a toughest thing. That is the technology we used before, the familiar technology, that doesn't work here. So I have to get a new approach. And it turns out that the gauge theory is very important. Actually, the gauge theory is a way to describe string condensed state. So the string condensed state is a state we have gauge theory. So gauge theory is very important. For this. Actually, it's designed for studying string condensed states. But however, it may not be best. Maybe there's an even better way. For some historical reason, we learn gauge theory before we know string condensation. But actually, gauge theory is a string condensation. It's a really same thing.
It's the gauge variant object in the string.
There's no, in a sense, this is Z2 gauge theory. When you find a string, there's a, it's just a spin system. And okay, in a standard field theory book, the gauge theory is defined as a theory with a gauge, with a local gauge invariance. That definition is bad, because the local gauge invariance, the gauge transformation is a transformation on the gauge potential, which is not physical. So you're using a transformation on a physical object to define a theory. That is bad. How do you define a gauge theory? You know why you say this is a gauge theory? And I don't know, but the most rigorous statement, definition now we have is topological entropy. That's this theory have a topological entropy. Maybe there is something string-like thing in it. Those are okay. The main problem is that we don't know how to define in a measurable way when a theory have a whose Lorentz dynamic is a gauge theory. Yeah. Actually, a very similar example is a photon in our vacuum. And one say, let me ask where the photon come from. You say, well, come superfluid. In a superfluid we have a linear mode. So maybe photon is a ghost mode in superfluid. So the vacuum is a superfluid. Then we say, oh, is that not right? Because a photon have a 2 polarization. The superfluid only have a 1 polarization. So specific heat doesn't work. But you say, okay, maybe you have a 2 condensate. This is a U1 cross U1 symmetry breaking. Then you have 2 mode. And then you ask, so there's a question, you know, why the photon are different? Why can we understand the photon as a ghost mode from 2 condensate? Yeah. So, using this example, really try to say is that we know the photon is a gauge theory. It's come from gauge theory. But I do not want to make this statement using gauge potential. Can we using some measurable, some design some experiments? If you perform these experiments, tell you whether photon is a two Gostan mode or the mode from U1 gauge theory. What kind of experimental measurement you can perform? So here we have a similar thing. You have some kind of speed system. It has certain low energy properties. Then you ask what kind of experiments you perform so that you can judge whether this low energy property of this system is behaving like conventional system or behaving like some unconventional with topological order. And try to determine whether the low energy fatty theory can, whether you should use a gauge theory to describe low energy fatty action or not is too formal. It's not something experimentalists can do. And it's better to design some experimental quantity, which when you measure this quantity, you can make a statement. So if at this level, what we don't have much, you know, this system at a torus have a four-fold degeneracy. And this degeneracy is robust. You know, that's one experimental thing you can do. Another, this ground state, this system also have this non-trivial topological entropy. So there's something like that. But the trouble is that when you're using this kind of property to judge whether this system at low energy behave like gauge theory or not, you find those experiments have no gauge potential. You know, because gauge potential is not physical, so you cannot measure them. So that is so unfortunately, all I can say that we say this is Z2 gauge theory not because this theory can be described by some kind of Z2 gauge theory. It's because this system on the torus have a four-fold degeneracy, and the topological entropy maybe it's a log two, you know, and so there's something, and so then this poses a mathematical question actually. Can we design a set of experiments which provide a complete calculation of a long-range entanglement? And this is a really bottom line. That's we say there is a, here we try to describe a quantum system with a long-range entanglement. And we don't have X-ray. You know, in a crystal, we have X-ray. If you do X-ray diffraction, we almost can determine the crystal structure completely. But here we don't have that analog. We have a few experiments that can measure a few things, but we don't have a complete set experiment which can completely characterize non-local entanglement. And this is the difficulty we have. And then we have to use the language of a gauge theory, which is very inconvenient, actually. They are not experimental accessible. So that's a problem. Okay. So this system is a very simple, but have this force field interaction. So let's make it more difficult. So let's see what I lost. Okay, maybe I'll give another example. Seems I only get over the first line of my list. So the second example is much simpler. From experiment point of view, it is a spin one system on the Kalkofen lattice, and you can also have a similar system on the Perrico lattice. Spin one system in a 2D Kalkofen lattice or 3D Perrico lattice. So again, the spin in the Kalkofen lattice is a link of a honeycomb lattice. So that's why I draw the honeycomb lattice. So spin live on the link of honeycomb lattice. Okay, it's spin one. So in this system, the SZ equal to zero is our reference state. That's it, this state has no string. The string is a state with a SZ equal to plus minus. So this kind of a state is a string state. So if I draw it, for example, we can draw a string state. So this is a plus, minus, plus, minus. say, class. So this kind of state is we call the string. So here the challenge is that can we find a Hamiltonian such that the superposition of all these kind of string states have to be ground state of this some kind of design Hamiltonian. In this particular case, this Hamiltonian is very simple. But
open string, are you closing it? Is a loop or no?
Yeah, here I draw it, it's open, but eventually close, yeah.
But sorry, so what's a constraint? I didn't understand the definition.
The reference is that s equal to 0 is a reference state. And the loop of up and down is, by definition, we call that a string. Yeah, the loop of up and down is called a string state. Then here we are looking for states where is a superposition for all strings, all closed strings. We hope this kind of states is a ground state of some simple Hamiltonian. And the question, what is this Hamiltonian? Okay, so the Hamiltonian here is a very simple Hamiltonian, which have a J1, it's XXD model. Then there's a GXY, which is a the first term is onside term. The second term is the nearest neighbor term, is a this kind of nearest neighbor term. So that's IJ, the nearest neighbor term. So nearest neighbor term have two. One is the SZ times SZ, another SXXY. You know, there's a two term. So this is the XXZ model. So you have only onside interaction and the nearest neighbor interaction, no other interaction. Okay. And the interesting thing happens, so let's consider limit, which is J1 equal to J2. And the JXY, sorry. Equal to zero.
Get the loop. So suppose those two bonds that you didn't make thick, you made a minus plus again.
It's plus minus plus that's minus plus.
Let's say it's no, but
that's it's never it's not frustrated. This is this kind of bipartite, I think. So you can always, for example, let's go back this. You can close it. So plus minus plus minus plus minus.
Yeah, but can you have branches? Like if this was
no branch.
Plus, could you not close this and then?
There's no branch. So this has this has to be zero.
Oh, I see.
So spin one is important.
Oh, okay.
So spin zero. Spin zero is a reference. It's a plus minus you have zeros.
So that couldn't been you cannot have that be a plus. Why not?
You can have that. That's to give a branched string.
That's what I'm asking. So how do you avoid that?
Oh, through Hamiltonian. You know, here I want
oh,
this.
I see. You have something.
I want the ground states. Okay. Yeah, we have the ground states.
You only want closed loops.
Ground states only closed loops, and then we want to design the Hamiltonian which favor only closed loops. Yeah.
And somehow you know that's. Do you have topological order? you don't want to have branches.
No, the branches give you a different topological order.
Okay.
That's a different story. Uh-huh. And this is so let's examine. This is a very simple. I think I'm hoping this Hamiltonian can be simulated in some kind of ultra-cold atom system. Actually, this really for this Hamiltonian. That's why I'm interested in this workshop. This what can be realized. And for this kind of if J1 equal to J2 and JXY equal to 0, then this first two term can be written as a one, two, three. I think J2 divided by 2, something like that. So this 1, 2, 3 is a three spin, again near a vertex. So each vertex have a three spin attached to it. So sum of the three spin square would give you these two terms, J1, J2 term, but only when J1 equal to J2. So therefore, it's clear that if J1 into J2 and this speed is very big, we hope around every vertex, the sum of the three speed equal to zero. So in this case, S equals zero state is a ground state, but they are not only ground states. Any closed loop like this plus minus closed loop also ground states. So therefore, if J1 equal to J2 and JXY equal to zero, then you have a high degeneracy. And the degenerate manifold is closed loops. That is a situation. Then the very similar thing, you know, this term actually create an open string, because this term kind of flip spins. This term can be written as S plus S minus IJ. So it's kind of flip spin on these two sides. So to create a segment string from here to here to here, create this segment alone. So therefore, the actual term link the closed string subspace. There's subset of closed strings, and to a subspace the open string. And these two, there's a gap between them, is order J1. And this GX term kind of link from make state from here to here. But in the third order perturbation theory, then this term would generate a term within the closed string subspace, which is a loop term, because you can make this segment three times, then you create small loop around the hexagon. So therefore, when J1 equals J2 and very big, but JX is very small, this term would induce an effective term in the subspace of Lorentz subspace of closed loops. That would be like a G times plus, minus, and etc. The six spin term, but it's on the hexagon. So the structure in this case, the structure of this model will be very similar to this model. Okay, but however, there's one crucial difference. The string in this model is oriented, and the string in this model is not oriented. To see the orientation, we see this, we just look at the following. If you pick a closed path, how many string configurations do we have? In that model, we only have one. Here we have a two, because we have a plus minus. We can make plus to minus, minus to plus as another. Okay. And this is a sign that this string is oriented. To really define orientation, we notice that this hexagon lattice is a bipartite. So we can have AB sublattice. So on each link, we can put arrow to that. So this is A lattice, so the arrow point to A lattice. This is B sublattice, so arrow point away from B sublattice, and etc. So we can put some kind of arrow on each link. Then the orientation of a string is the orientation of a link if S is a plus on that link. Then it's consistent, because now this S is a minus, so that's orientation is this way. So this string is orientation, have this orientation. The other string would have opposite orientation. So therefore, in this S equal to one model, this is the string is oriented. So this is sum over oriented loops. And the consequence is that we don't get Z2 gauge theory, we get U1 gauge theory. So this model is a gap, the string condensate is not topological. It have a gapless excitation. And the gapless collect mode satisfies Maxwell equation. So in three dimensions, in two dimensions, there are some more tricky instant effect. But basically, if you do this on a particle lattice, this is a model which have an artificial photon, essentially. So that is a simple
this
model.
Is shown explicitly, or this is how?
Okay. How rigorous it is. And the result is rigorous. If we go to large S limit, if S is large, say like N, not 1, if N is large, it's more rigorous. And then there is
you really control at the level of the Hamiltonian? This Hamiltonian is equivalent to U1 gauge theory?
I don't know what you mean by really. So you can do some kind of Haber-Schottani transformation, and you can do those kind of tricks. And in large S limit, you find all the step you did is a semi-classical. You know, there is no strong fluctuation. So it's the large S limit is a semi-classical limit. So in that sense, it's more or less reliable. And when S equals 1 happen to be a limit which is hard to, it's easy to do experimentally, but hard to show theoretically, you do have a photon. But the large S limit, you can have that, you can have semi-classical limit, you can do that. And another thing I want to mention is that how to show, how to handle this, how do you know you have Maxwell equation in this system? The way to, I won't do this in detail, but I just want to mention that it is very important. One can use equation motion approach. In the equation motion approach, it's very important to find operator which act within the low energy subspace. And one operator is this B operator, which is this S plus S minus. You know. So this operator, which create a little string, which act within this subspace. Another operator we call the E operator. This B is defined on the plaquette. E operator defined on link, actually. Well, maybe just E defined on link, okay. This operator is simple as Z. Both of these two operators act within the closed string subspace. And this is art. You have to choose enough of the operator which act within the closed string subspace. Then try to construct equation motion for the average of those operators. And from there, try to get the collecting mode. And in this particular case, this E operator and the B operator is a good choice. And E will be electric field and B is a magnetic field. So when you derive equation motion for the E operator and the B operator, average of them, you'll find the Maxwell equation where B behaves like an electric flux through the link. Then in the continuum limit, you can smear the flux that will become an electric field. And the B is a magnetic flux through the plaquette, and the smear it became a magnetic field. So if you really do this on the lattice, you will get a discretized Maxwell equation on the lattice. Then smear it, you get the standard continuum Maxwell equation. So that is the way to do this.
But why is it, I expect the Hamiltonian to be quadratic in the magnetic field, not.
Yeah,
so the electric field appears quadratically, but the magnetic field.
Yeah, that's cosine B. You could call cosine B.
Oh, I see.
So I shouldn't say this. Maybe let's call this, strict speaking, this is E to the I phi operator.
Okay. Yeah.
I really want to do this. This is this average of this operator corresponds to E to the I phi. Yeah.
But some sine.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the phi is this phi is flux. Yeah. So that is how this done. So actually, this became interesting because if you're using the energy level filling picture, we cannot understand this. But the equation motion turned out to be a very powerful way to do that. So I think equation motion method is developed, you know, by many people. But somehow it's not a textbook topic, or at least not a standard textbook topic. So probably, you know, to study this kind of, this string condensed state which have non-trivial dynamics. In this case, we do have gapless photon have non-trivial dynamics. Then to understand this non-trivial dynamics, this equation motion approach may be very useful. And so then even within this equation motion method, one can ask this question, this large S, small S limit. Because once you have equation motion method, you can get equation motion, you can just take a quadratic order. Then you can study the quantum fluctuation. Then you can test whether quantum fluctuation is small or big. Then in this model, in the large S limit, you can find a parameter regime. The parameter regime is that when J1 minus J2. Yeah, this is real some physics. Maybe let me just. When delta J1 minus J2 is much less than G. In this limit and in the large S limit, this the equation motion method is this quantum fluctuation from the collect mode turns out to be very small. So that's make this semi-classical equation motion method seems reliable. Yeah. Yeah, there's one thing I didn't study is when we have string condensation, that is We just mentioned if a J1 into J2, all the closed strings have the same energy. But however, if a J1 is slightly bigger than J2, we have delta J, then delta J is a string tension. And so if a delta J is very, very big, the ground state just prefer S equal to 0 states. That's mainly is a, if J1 is very big, delta J is very big, this term just prefer S equal to 0, that's it. And however, if a delta J is much less than G, if this string hopping term is very important, then the ground state prefer to be the superposition of different string states. So the phase diagram is that small delta J, we get a small string, a large string phase. And a large delta J, we get a small string phase. And a small string phase actually is a so-called confined phase, if using the gate theory language. So confined phase means just small string phase. Yeah, so this is a wonderful model, kind of simple model. There actually, just to finish, I just want to say that there's many ways to have strings. And another way, a standard way to have a string, is a model studied by Leon Balin and Matthew Fisher and Gervin. It's also a very simple model. Again, it's on the Kagame lattice. And they have this J1 interaction of this type. They have this kind of interaction, but they have J1, J2, J3. They have J1, they have J2, they have J3. But their model is a spin 1/2 model, not spin 1 model. So spin 1/2 model with J1, J2, J3 in the SZ direction. It's only SZ coupling. So this is a SZI, SZJ coupling. When J1, J2, J3 are equal, then this term can be viewed as a sum of the sum of SZ squared on each triangle, on each hexagon. So therefore, if this term is big, then what you have is that let me just draw here. Then around each hexagon, you prefer to have a 3 up, 3 down. It's a 3 up, 3 down picture. So I think you can try to. Then you pick a certain 3 up, 3 down configuration. You know, there's many 3 up, 3 down configuration. They all have same energy because this term only is, as long as you have a 3 up, 3 down each hexagon, then that will be fine. So there's many of them, and I think if I remember correctly, is that you can pick a reference state, some kind of 3 up, 3 down configuration on each hexagon. Then you can draw a loop in the dual lattice. Suppose you draw a loop, you draw the loop on the dual lattice like this. So this is a loop in the dual lattice. Then you flip spin on the loop. You flip all the spin on the loop. Because you can see this loop always intersect this hexagon twice. No, this doesn't work actually. Let me try to see. No, not this loop. Probably it's this loop. I think they are doing this. They're doing this kind of loop. Okay, and okay. So what I try to say is that in order to maintain the this model is a little complicated. I think in order to maintain this 3 up, 3 down configuration, you can only flip that if this is if this is up, 1 is down. So there's some loops are flippable, some loops not flippable. There's such concern. Not every loop is flippable. And but you can, for some flip loop, if this up and down configuration, you can flip flip spin on this loop, and to get another configuration with the same energy. The point I try to make here is that you can pick a reference 3 up, 3 down configuration, And the other three up, three down configuration are different only by loops. So that's a one way to get a loop. This is not simple example. Another simple example is dimer model on the dimer covering on the square lattice. The dimer covering on square lattice have a similar property. That's any two different dimer covering, if you lay on top of each other, they only differ by loops. So therefore, so in this case, when you study different dimer configuration, it's equivalent to study a different loop configuration, because the difference of the dimer always is loops. So that is so there's many way to get to have this loop structure, and once you have this loop structure, and then that's tell you this non-local entanglement. Yeah, so that's one thing.
You somehow need. It's not just loops, but the loops are in a particular phase where there's a lot of difference.
Yes, that's right. So in this case, if a dimer don't fluctuate, that means only small loop is allowed, as allowed fluctuation. So when you have a large loop fluctuation, that means dimer have a strong fluctuation. So dimer liquid and loop liquid in this case is the same thing. Yeah. So just to finish, I just want to say that. To get a loop liquid is actually not so easy. The one thing I didn't emphasize is that the string-string interaction. You know, this the string in general, string-string have interaction. For example, when you do the second order perturbation theory, this second order perturbation theory may generate some kind of string-string interaction. And when the string-string, when you have a string-string interaction, the string may want to form a liquid, a solid phase rather than liquid phase. Yeah. So, say for example, if even when delta j is very small, even negative, you prefer to have a lot of strings. But a lot of string does not imply liquid. You may have a small string form a crystal, or long string form this long line which don't fluctuate. This some kind of stripe phase. So the string, there's a lot of way for strings to form some kind of solid states. And so that's the main competing states. Even when you identify the string structure, there's a lot of competing string solid states. And I think in the previous study, the concentration, there's more constraint on the string solid phase, because certain string configuration have more way to fluctuate. And then that configuration was preferred to enhance this string hopping. And so that's so-called order from disorder, you know. And for this model, actually, they have special property that in large S limit, especially, all the string configuration have the same neighboring. And so it's easier to get a string liquid from here. But the one main thing, especially in the parallel lattice, one major thing one has to worry about is a string-string interaction. We do have a string-string interaction. If a string-string interaction is bigger than the string hopping term, then we cannot say for sure we have a string liquid, and it may very likely have a string solid. So from experimental side, when one construct model like this, or from numerical side, then the main concern is to test whether ground state is some kind of string liquid or string solid. That is a main question here. Okay, let me just end here. Yeah. Some questions, yeah.
I haven't looked at any of these parallel order type string states. Are they strings or are there membrane states?
There are strings. For this model, you can generalize this model to parallel, just this nearest neighboring parallel, this unsigned parallel. And for this model, it's string, same type up and down strings. And the parallel, the difficult, for parallel, I have less confidence because the parallel at the second order, I think you have, in some order, you have some other unwanted interaction. Maybe that's make this argument more difficult. Yeah. Yeah.
Could you say more about what you meant when you said that superconductors, for example, are non-Landau Ginzburg systems? I mean, do you
include dynamical gauge field?
But
if a gauge field,
I mean, I remember that there's old work showing that the transition can become first order and so on.
Yeah.
The people who did that work probably felt that they were working within
Mathematically, they are similar. I completely agree. It's just that when you have a dynamic gauge field, you just don't have Gaussian mode. So it's different from superfluid. So it's very, very different from superfluid. You know, you don't even have a Gaussian mode in the simple conducting phase. And it's pretty simple thing. Just you don't have a Gaussian mode. And
so the same can be said about electrical symmetry breaking particles.
Yeah, and in a sense, you say. Maybe let me put it this way. You can say that I don't know, you know, there is a very important mathematical question, is the confinement in the gauge theory, like in QCD or things like that. But from this kind of setup, the confined phase is very simple, it's S equals 0 phase. So that's what I mean. In a Higgs phase, look at a Higgs phase is something quite non-trivial. You have a Higgs boson, Higgs condense. But this model, the Higgs phase, is kind of like S equals 0 phase. And in this language, what happens following? The open stream, the end of open stream is a charged particle in this model. So the fluctuation closed stream gives you electromagnetic field, but the end of open stream is a charge. The Higgs phase is a phase where the end of stream costs no energy or maybe even negative energy. You prefer to create a lot of charge, means you prefer to create a lot of end of stream, and that means the stream prefer to break up. When the stream prefer to break up, the ground state just became this small second of strings, but the small second of string is just a single spin flip. So when you have a liquid of small second of string, it simply say, oh, we have a state with S equal to zero, and we have a lot of a single spin, independent single spin flip as a fluctuation. That's a very boring conventional states. But that boring conventional state is a Higgs phase in this model. So the Higgs phase have a very simple picture here.
So do you have an understanding of, like, you want to have large loops in your, you want the ground, you know, for the ground state you have topological order, you want to have large loops in that ground state. But what kind of distribution is there? You know, clearly if you take equal superposition,
that's ideal.
How much can you tolerate? Is there some feeling of
this is a kind of interesting question. So that's one thing, the related question is that can one develop a mean field theory for string condensation? Because we only know how to do mean field theory. If you have mean field theory, we don't know what to do. So one way to develop mean field theory is the following. We can construct a wave function of the spins, you know. But however, this wave function is given by this alpha raised to this Lx power. The Lx is the total length of a string. So this is some kind of trial wave function. Alpha is some trial parameter. If alpha is very small, that means this wave function dominated by no string states. So the small loop states. If alpha equal to 1, that's equal with the superposition. So one expects just some kind of phase transition at a certain value of alpha. Mm-hmm. But actually, this is kind of simple because when you plot this wave function, if alpha is positive, this is a statistical system. It's all this loop gas with certain weight. And then for the oriented loop, the loop gas oriented loop can be viewed as a trajectory of a conserved particle in the space-time. And the large loop phase is a boson condensed phase for this conserved particle.
These are just like Feynman cycles.
Yeah. So there is a way to do some mean field theory, you know, to map this into the particle system and do mean field theory for the particle system, try to find a symmetry breaking transition in that particle system, but in one lower dimension. So that's one mean field way to determine when you have a transition. So the program is that this alpha is a trial parameter. We minimize average energy to determine value of alpha. Then we study this loop gas with this value of alpha to see whether this loop gas is in a small string phase or large string phase. Then that determines the phase diagram. If this loop gas in the large string phase, we say, okay, we have string condensation. This is kind of not rigorous, you know, but it's a one way try to determine numerically or through mean field method when you have a small string phase, when you have a large string phase. Yeah. So this is a one way to do that.
So if J1 is greater than J2, that's the small string phase, right?
If it is much bigger than J2, then it's a small string phase.
So is there like interpretation that J1 minus J2 is something like photon mass?
No, the photon never get mass because a square term is not gating around. We don't have that term. But when J1 minus J2 is big, indeed there is a phase transition from big string phase to small string phase, and indeed we have a gap. The gap does appear. For small differences, still in the small string phase, it's a large string phase. It's a comparison between this Hopping term G and the delta J. Only when delta J is much bigger than Hopping term, then you get a small string phase. If a delta J is smaller than Hopping term, then you're still in the large string phase.
So with the small string phase, can you interpret it as photons which you get, like Anderson-Hicks and superconductors?
This is very funny, because if this J1, J2 is very big, the end string still costs big energy. So there's no Higgs particle, there's no Higgs condensation. So, but we can, even in that limit, we can still have a confinement transition from large string phase to small string phase. So this is different from making J1, J2 very small. You can make a J1, J2 very small to make an end of string cost very little energy. So why is the string breakup transition from closed string to open string breakup transition? This is a Higgs transition. Another is from only for closed string, from large closed string to small closed string. That is a more confinement transition. But the final phase belongs to the same universal class. No, it's the Higgs phase and the small string phase is the same universality class. That's but these two transition, but this yeah.
So it's the same phase? How do you
tell? It's this one phase which you only have a small loop of strings. Another phase, you could have a small fluctuation with this up and down spin. Yeah. But they both are kind of small perturbation of SD equals zero states. Mm-hmm. And not allowing open stream probably may not be a big deal. I don't see the phase transition. The small stream open up is kind of local perturbation. I don't see any phase transition associated with this.
So you're saying that a lot of the problems you're interested in are basically gauge theories, but then obviously there's lots of work on gauge theories, and for instance, you can distinguish different phases by looking at Wilson loops and So could you say more about why the established ideas to do with gauge theories don't? So
yeah, that's a very interesting question. A Wilson loop doesn't work.
And is that because you got matter? Or?
Yes, exactly. And this theory always has matter. It's not pure gauge theory. It's always a matter. So you cannot use a perimeter law, or area law, Wilson loop to distinguish whether you're in a confined phase or not confined phase. But but this is a very important line of thinking, in the sense that, you know, when I say small string, large string, something picture-wise, do you have a precise measurement or something to really determine whether you are in a small string phase or large string phase? Especially when you have this term, the string can break virtually and rejoin. So in the wave function, you don't even have a closed string. You have a lot of open string, but it's still you have, in a sense, you have this small string, large string phase. So the precise measurement or definition of small string, large string is unknown, actually. In this model, the only thing I can offer is a topological entropy. I know that in a small string phase, the topological entropy is zero. For the large string phase, the topological entropy is not zero, but may not be universal. It's some big number, but not zero. And the Wilson loop doesn't work. Usually, when the confined phase, the deconfined phase is characterized by a Wilson loop. But when you have a matter, the Wilson loop always have a perimeter law. They never have an error law. So confined phase, you have a perimeter law. And the deconfined phase, you have a perimeter law. So you cannot distinguish. But actually, with a Hastings, we find the correct statement should be the zero law and the perimeter law. In general, the Wilson loop always have a perimeter law. But however, in the deconfined phase, in the large loop phase, you can find a particular string operator, or this Wilson loop operator, which have a zero law, which is its average do not depend on size of loop. And in the confined phase, there is no string operator which have a zero law. So it is the existence of a string operator which satisfies zero law is a kind of a more rigorous way to define these two phases. But then that's making numerical calculation very difficult. That is, you have to looking for a precise string operator and which have a zero law. And the existing string operator with zero law characterizes a string condensed phase. That is
numerically, if you measure recent loop correlation,
yes,
then depending on whether it is confined or confined phase, maybe
I see. That's maybe yeah. This kind of idea, I really like that. One needs something, you know. In a conventional calculation, we're using a correlation function of a local operator, which doesn't work. But maybe it's correlation of a certain non-local operator. For example, this link the loop, and when the loop very big, maybe there is something. You know, there should be some idea. Actually, link the loop should work. And in many string condensed phase, you can have several strings, and this linked loop is a statistics, you know. So sometimes the linked loop may work. There should be something, you know. Right now it's a kind of early stage. I don't know what is the best way to characterize. But this is a very serious problem because suppose some people doing remarks like quantum Monte Carlo can do very big system and obtain a wave function. But even I know the wave function, I don't know, I cannot judge whether this wave function describes a string condensed phase or not condensed phase, because of lack of a universal. One way, right now we know is to calculate topological entropy. That's one way. But maybe there's other way, like a correlation function of a loop or something non-local.
I think but recent loop, even though need to be very large, even small recent loop correlation can have very different behavior.
That's true because this U1 gate theory is have a gapless excitation.
Oh, okay.
So it will show up. But then there's the issue whether this gapless excitation comes from some breaking of some symmetry or emerging symmetry or something. Whether it's come from loop or from whether it's come from symmetry breaking or from some non-local entanglement.
Yeah, if
there's
messy, it's difficult.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah. And all this statement is more or less more rigorous for the gap phase. For the gapless phase, there is a trouble. I couldn't make a very rigorous statement for the gapless phase. Yeah.
So what about all the particle physicists who've been working on light escape theories for 20 years or whatever? I mean, have they been concerned with the same problems that you're talking about of characterizing different phases? Or is there some important distinction between the gauge theories that come up in the
exactly. So we are talking about in last dinner. That is, you know, that in the light in the particle physics and light gauge theory, people dealing with non-local Hilbert space, because the gauge constraint is enforced rigorously. When you have this rigorous gauge constraint, the Hilbert space of a total system do not decompose into the direct product of a local Hilbert space. And this is crucial. So the Hilbert space itself already non-local. Then in that setup, the Wilson loop perimeter law, error law works.
Even with matter?
No, with that thing. When you have a matter, actually, there are two ways to go to local system. One is to impose a soft constraint. We say the gauge variant state have a big energy. Or you can add the matter. Actually, these two are equivalent. not totally. I think I also meant to say, certain lattice gauge theory with the matter can be viewed as a local boson system with a soft constraint. I cannot say that all the gauge theory with the matter can be viewed that way. But if you put the matter in a certain nice way, then the whole system can be viewed as a local spin system with a soft constraint. So these two can be equivalent. So what I really try to say is that if you start with a local system where the total Hilbert space is a direct product of the local Hilbert space, the gauge theory always have a matter. And then there are some, and the people know that, you know, when you have matter, the certain thing become very more delicate. And it's harder to determine whether you are in one phase or another. But this is really a serious problem. That is, the topological entropy, although it's a way to do it, it's just so inconvenient. It's just so hard to calculate. Whether there is other way would be really nice. Yes?
Yeah, probably I want to make two statements about
the
measure.
Sure.
So one is the probability entropy is actually very hard to calculate in the quantum of the quantum because they're only efficient in actually calculating for the number of times.
I see.
And you're not able to get this polynomial speed up because the coefficient in the wave function.
Yes.
So you cannot calculate the density matrix, you know, in an efficient way. So
it's
a, you know, exponential problem. So the topological entropy is basically not accessible in quantum Monte Carlo. But of course, you can calculate correlation function of Wilson loops.
What?
Of Wilson loop.
Okay, yeah.
There's something you can do. Actually, those measurements appear to be not very constructive in the context of atomic physics as measurements
in the laboratory. Yes. Because you're, you know, involved non-local measurements. So I think this is one of the big gaps. So, you know, even if this implemented would have been implemented, you know, how would we know that we are in topological space? I'm probably that's the reason.
Okay. Why we have never seen one.
Yeah. So actually, we can ask a similar question. How do we know our vacuum? How do we know the photon is not a ghost town mode? Mm-hmm. And the way we know is actually the falling. And I'm thinking about this question.
Yeah, as opposed to?
Two ghost town mode. You know, the photon can be two ghost town mode.
As opposed to something from topological order.
Yeah. It's really the same thing in the photon. You know, our vacuum have a photon. You know, how do you know? I try to say our vacuum is a string condensed state. How do you know that? Because the photon satisfies a Maxwell equation. But how do you know photon satisfies a Maxwell equation? What kind of experiments you do? One experiment one do is the following. One have this kind of some glass which is partial reflection, and you have this kind of two piece of glass. You have a photon go this way, and go this way, and go this way. It's just you have beam of light do this. And what you do is that you rotate this glass around this axis. Then you'll find that the reflect light with the intensity would change because this became so-called partially polarized. And you don't have that for the ghost town mode. It's mainly what you really measure is that the polarization of the photon have a sense of a spatial direction. But for the ghost town mode, they don't have a sense of a spatial direction. Yeah, and this should mean transverse, yeah. And it is this kind of a thing. So if you construct this system in a particle lattice, for example, then you have a three-dimensional mode. You can measure specificity. You say, oh, I have two modes which both have linear dispersion relation. Then you have to try to measure the helicity of these two modes, whether these two modes have some transverse polarized or not. If these two modes are transverse polarized, then that is a kind of a say it should start a Maxwell equation. And then that's kind of experimental way to determine, well, this may be a string condensed. Or maybe there's a better way, but currently the experiments experimental way to detect those states is falling. Those states have no symmetry breaking, so there's no finite temperature phase transition. So experiment just measure some spin system, try to look for transition. If they don't find anything, it's declare victory. Oh, I find something new. That is the current situation.
That's for systems in 2+1 dimensions.
Huh?
Yeah.
In 3+1 can be tricky. Yeah, even that don't work. It's kind of funny situation. You know, they just do some quantum spin system and look for transition and hope they didn't find anything. They can have a PLL. But that's kind of situation now.
But then in 3 dimensions, you look for transition and hope you can't find any local order.
Yeah, and but the things are what to measure. Yeah, how to have a convenient way to measure this string condensation is a problem. There's a way to measure. Just the way I think about it all is not very sorry.
So it's because this is U1 gauge theory?
Yeah, this is U1 gauge theory. And it's trickier. If you have a topological state, it's even trickier. Yeah. And another way to measure is to do the phase transition. You know, usually when you have this phase transition between topological ordered state and some other non-topological ordered states, the critical theory have a new set of exponents which do not satisfy. It's not a usual one. It's not a usual symmetry breaking one. So that's another way. This is a problem, you know. It's for the Z2 state, it's even harder, you know. The best way to see you have a Z2 state is if you don't see anything, then you're most likely to have some kind of power out of the states. But yeah, because the statistics are also hard to measure, you know. If you certain measure of quasi-particle statistics is another way. But I think once you have a system, if you do detailed measurement of quality system, you can see sign for some strange property. But without a specific system, it's very hard to determine what to measure, because a different system is different, because if you have ultra-cold atom system, you do not want to do neutron scattering. But if you have a solid state spin system, maybe neutron scattering is a good way to probe some of those things.
Yeah. Are there any kind of usually in quantum physics, can you look at high temperatures and see some kind of strange scaling behavior and susceptibilities, or any
No. Yeah. I can only say that in fact, 2D1, there's no finite temperature phase transition.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
Even if you,
suppose you have a topological ordered state, and then you have some other states. And if this transition point is continuous, then you have a very interesting critical theory here, usually. And the critical behavior is different from the symmetry breaking one. Because in the symmetry breaking transition, there's always some kind of order parameter whose fluctuation determines critical behavior. And you can use Gibbs law theory to calculate exponent. And here, the low-lying fluctuation is not order parameter, it's something else. Usually it's gauge theory or some kind of fractional charged particle or things like that, a fractional statistical particle. And then really a very different set of a critical exponent.
So if you extend the space
diagram? Yeah, that finite temperature certainly will be different. Yeah, if at the finite temperature, if you approach from the finite temperature, yeah, the exponent also different. Yeah, just this is a new set of critical point. So in a sense, measure this critical point is probably easier than measure this topological phase itself. That's
so you should have some thermodynamic anomalies or no?
Kind of, yes. For example,
I know it's
just exponent are different. It's the scaling.
But it's still going to be in terms of, sort of generically, it will be similar to conventional phase transition.
Yeah, in a from scaling point of view, it's similar. It's just a different set of scaling exponent. And otherwise it would be similar.
Are there any examples where it's worked out?
Yes. And not very. I think one example, this is a so-called deconfined critical point. This is from the willing span solid to new order. Yeah. And
there is a different exponent, but still otherwise.
The critical theory is certainly different. I don't know whether critical. Yeah, in large limit, you can capture certain exponent. Yeah.
Just quickly, going back a bit, I wanted to check that I was clear about something you said before. Talking about experimental probes, you said for spin systems you could use neutron scattering. So did you mean that you'd look for fractionalized excitations? Or?
Okay, that is one thing. Usually in the other system you have a spin wave. A spin wave is have a character that's at low energy that in non-interacting particles you have this delta function like peak. And for many, especially for this algebraic spin liquid, you have a gauge theory coupled to some gapless fermion or boson. Then you don't have a quasi particle. So some of this strange phase that at low energy there's no quasi particle excitation. And so if you calculate green function, they all branch cut. So that's one way you can use neutron scattering. There's another thing I want to say is that there are some states, so-called the pi flux states. The pi flux states in some spin liquid, it have a property that the spin one. So suppose you have this spin one excitation, you have this spectrum, the energy and the k. You know the spin one excitation have a band. You know those are spin one excitation. So there's a lower edge, for example, or upper edge. If you trace the lower edge in the Brillouin zone, you'll find the lower edge is a periodic in half a Brillouin zone. That is so if you know the lower edge in this region, then the outside this region is already determined. So it's have this high degree of periodicity. And this is a special property of the pi flux phase. And so that's something. This higher periodicity is another thing one can measure. But this is really for the pi flux. And this is universal in a sense. You can add any perturbation to the system. You do not break the periodicity. Once you break the periodicity, that means there's a phase transition, you go to another phase. Yeah, so the pi flux phase have this kind of a special property. Yeah, so those are kind of things we know how to link to the experiments, but they're all very indirect and not systematic. That's a problem we have so far.
Okay, should we quit here?
Yeah.
Thanks, Shavan, again.
Yeah, thank you.